Thousands of students are going back to Boston University and Northeastern University this week and next, the two largest universities in the city of Boston, and we want to talk about it. But I have to be transparent right off the top here because I moved my own freshman daughter, Simone, into a Boston University dorm this past weekend. And once the bed sheets were on and the suitcases were empty and everything was all unpacked, we had a brand new item on our move-in list. It was her first COVID test, which she was required to get the day she moved in.
There was a little tube with some liquid in it. And on top of that, there was a swab. I told you not to touch the swab with your hands. So you unscrewed the swab, put it in both nostrils, swirled it around a little bit, then put it down into the liquid of the tube and closed it again. And then you just gave them the tube. So it took about 5 minutes.
Now, whether you have a college-age kid or not, with dozens of colleges and universities in Greater Boston, this uncharted territory of keeping students and communities safe while supporting student learning is essential, so we're going to delve into it. And to do that, we have two people who are involved in these decisions. One is joining us now, and we expect to have the other on the line soon. So we're joined right now by Dr. David Hamer. He's a professor of global health at Boston University School of Public Health and School of Medicine, and also a member of the medical advisory group, which advises the university on the public health measures and recommendations being implemented on campus this fall. Dr. Hamer, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, we're glad to have you. And that was perfect because we now have our other guest with us as well, Kathy Spiegelman, who is Vice President and Chief of Campus Planning and Development at Northeastern. Kathy, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you.
And listeners, are you a parent, a student, a neighbor of a college or a university? How do you feel about campuses reopening? Do you have questions for our experts? You can call us, 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or you can tweet us at Radio Boston. Okay, Dr. Hamer, I want to start by touching on some of the big headlines in college reopenings over the last couple of weeks. Both the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and Notre Dame have moved to fully remote learning after the coronavirus clusters on campus. University of Alabama and Tuscaloosa just reported over 500 confirmed cases. I want to ask you, what are you doing to make sure a similar situation doesn't play out at your school?
Well, that's a good question. I think that we've looked at some of the strategies that these other universities have taken, and I think we're taking a much more broad approach. I would say even more aggressive. So as you mentioned, with the case of your daughter, at Boston University, we are requiring everyone who arrives to be tested on arrival. If a student's moving in from a state that has higher levels of transmission than Massachusetts, New York, New England, then they're advised to do quarantine for the first 14 days, although we may clear them from quarantine sooner if they have three negative tests. The move-in is being done in a de-densified way so that people have to schedule the day they move in. Normally, it's a three-day period that everyone returns to campus. It's spread out over 15 days or thereabouts. And there's just a lot of different additional measures, but I think testing is a real key part of it. We've built a laboratory to do our own testing, and the turnaround time in tests is less than 24 hours. This is important because if a student's identified who is infected, then they need to be isolated. And so we have isolation dorm rooms that we've developed. And once they're in isolation, they have to stay there for at least 10 days or potentially a little longer if they've had symptoms with their illness. And they would do their classes from those isolation rooms. UNC, as just an example, didn't have a sufficient number of isolation beds, and they very rapidly filled them. But they also had a different testing strategy. We're going to be testing students twice a week, as well as faculty and staff that have a lot of student-facing contact or a lot of time on campus. Others will be tested once a week or potentially less often if they say it's a faculty member that's only intermittently on campus. So testing is a key part of it, as well as isolation and then contact tracing to see if there have been any close contacts of students that are infected. Those people are identified quickly, asked to actually placed in quarantine. And if they become symptomatic, then additional testing is done. Everyone has. No, sorry. Let me sort of stop there.
Thanks, because I'd love to hear from Kathy Spiegelman as well what the plan is at Northeastern. I know you just made a change and students will be tested, I believe, every 3 days there. And I know BU has more students on campus now that the timing for Northeastern is a little further out. So what's your process look like and what are you guys doing?
Well, it looks very much like what was just described. I'm not the testing expert, but I have been following very closely because my team has been working on setting up the testing facility, both the lab and the testing facility, and your daughter's description is very similar to what's been going on. We've done 8,000 tests so far. The move-in system for us sounds a little bit different. Our move-in's happening over 11 days. It usually happens over 3 to 5. And we're doing that in order to reduce the density and allow us to have the stream of people coming in and getting tested to be handled as conveniently and easily as possible. The parents of our students will not be going up to their dorm rooms and making their beds and setting them up. They've been notified that no visitors are going to come into the dorms during move-in. As soon as a family arrives at their assigned time, the student will be sent over to pick up their, what we call their Husky card, go directly to the testing center, and then go directly to their room where they will be technically in quarantine until their test results come back negative. Obviously, if the test results don't come back negative, they will be transferred to the beds that we're reserving that we call wellness beds, which will be used both for students who test positive but also through the contact tracing for students who've been exposed in order to make sure that we take them out of contact with a lot of the rest of the community. So I think it sounds very similar to BU. I think the differences that were described by the doctor are also the differences at Northeastern from some of the other universities that have run into the difficulties that you described. I will say that because I spend a lot more time thinking about the physical campus and how we are handling all the things that living and learning activities require under the guidance of the CDC and the Department of Public Health. So lots of attention, lots of signage, lots of we have a campaign called Protect the Pack, which reinforces for students their responsibility to protect themselves and each other with healthy distancing, wearing masks on campus, washing their hands, and then following all of the other protocols that we've developed about reducing the density in our classrooms and our dining facilities, cleaning, air handling in our buildings, but mm-hmm. also paying attention to the public realm because we know that our students are not just going to be in the dorms and in the classrooms. They're coming back to campus. They're coming to Boston to live their campus life, and we're very anxious for them to be able to do that, to pursue their education without any disruption for the surrounding community or for everybody else who's on the campus.
So to that point of the public realm and listeners, we just got very detailed explanations of exactly what is happening at these two huge institutions in Boston as students come back. What is your reaction? Does it make you feel safer? Are there concerns? Do you have clarifying questions? What do you want to see from the university in your community in terms of learning and safety? 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. These are massive investments, massive measures that you're both talking about. What do you say to the listener who says, I appreciate all of that, but students simply should not be back on campus? It's too risky, and you cannot control their choices and behaviors when they're not in the dorms or in the buildings. Why is being on campus important enough to make it worth all of this, Dr. Hamer?
I think it's important for students to have both interaction with other students, but to be able to directly interact with faculty, to have an in-class experience. And I think some students may learn very well, via Zoom or other modalities, but others don't. And I think that and then being able to do collaborative projects with other students, you know, in person rather than over the internet. I think all of these are really important components of the student's education, and not offering them that opportunity, that they, you know, I think that it really changes the whole sort of tenure or feel for students' education.
And Karen Spiegelman, what do you do about the challenges of off-campus life? So many of the stories that we're hearing about new clusters emerging at universities as students go back keep coming back to, it was that off-campus party where people didn't wear masks, they didn't practice social distancing.
So the campaign that I described called Protect the Pack includes a series of communications and also compliance reinforcement, a tip line, some extra staffing and ambassadors to be working with students, whether they are living in Northeastern housing or they're living in other housing in the community. I will echo the idea that we believe that the education of our students is very important, that their choices to be able to participate in the living and learning that happens on campus is important, that our students are choosing to want, many of our students, not all, some are choosing to actually pursue their education virtually, and we've given them that option to do it. But I think the testing and the protocols and the way the contact tracing and the things that we're doing on campus, we hope actually makes our students a cohort of citizens within the Boston community who actually are practicing all the things that we hope everybody in the Boston community is practicing, because we all have a responsibility to each other under this pandemic to be looking out for the health of ourselves and our neighbors. So
Let's
we are really
phones.
Committed to doing it, and we're asking our students to be committed along with us.
I want to go to the phones before I do. Kathy, I called you Karen a minute ago. I'm so sorry.
No problem.
I know it's Kathy. That was a brain lapse. Let's go to the phones, 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've got Donna on the line from Brockton. Donna, go ahead.
I just wanted to know if there's going to be clear consequences for students that party or congregate and don't socially distance like they're supposed to, like we've seen on the news. If there's going to be clear consequences, are they going to be taken out of school, just like for any other thing that they do bad, like plagiarism or fighting or anything like that? Are there going to be clear consequences that this is not accepted at all?
Thanks, That's Donna. All. And Kathy, I think you touched on that a second ago, right? Saying that
yes,
there were
the
at Northeastern?
Absolutely, the answer is absolutely yes. We understand that we can only protect each other and be the kind of citizens and members of the community that we want to be by making it clear that those big gatherings where people are not wearing masks, are not practicing the safe protocols that we've established, will not be allowed.
And I want to grab another call here, 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Jill, you're on from South Boston. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Jill. I'm a graduate of Boston University of 2017, and I just wanted to add, I think that the value of being on campus is so important to student life, and, you know, gave so much to me as a student during my 4 years, and I think that the way that the university has implemented the measures would make me feel completely safe as a student. I just looked over their 20-page comprehensive Get Back to Campus plan, and I feel, you know, I would feel completely safe, and there is a lot of personal responsibility that goes into it as well. So I think the students have everything at their fingertips, and they just need to choose to implement and make the good decisions. And
thanks, Jill.
I think I commend BU for that.
Thank you, Jill. And Dr. Hamer, stay put because we have a second call about BU. I'll take them both and then give you a chance to respond. We've got Jason on the line from Stoneham. Jason, go ahead.
Hi, yes. I'm actually a faculty member at BU. And I have to call into question whether it's worth letting students prioritizing student learning over public health. And I know for a fact, as a faculty member, that students are not going to get much of an in-class experience. Most of the learning is going to be online at BU, so that's really false advertising.
All right, thank you for that call. So two very different perspectives there from, and obviously we can't confirm that Jill's an alum and Jason is faculty, but two very different calls about BU there. Dr. Hamer, what are your responses?
I mean, first of all, I'd like to thank Jill for her positive comments. We put a lot of time into the return to campus plan. It's very detailed. It is a little long, but I think it's thorough and comprehensive, and with the aim of trying to make the campus as safe as possible to maintain the health of, you know, faculty, staff, and students. I slightly disagree with Jason. You know, I think you're partly right. There's going to be a mixture of in-class and out-of-class experience. Students have the option of taking everything remotely. Some are doing that. All classrooms have had mapping done to determine appropriate density. I'm going to be teaching starting in, I guess, a week and a half or so, and the classroom that I have allows up to 16 students. I teach a seminar type course and we have 23 enrolled. So at any one time, like three quarters or two thirds of the class could be present. I don't think they're all going to choose to be present, but you know, I think that many will have an in-class experience. Some are opting out of that, and that's their choice. Others may, you know, go for a mix, but I think it's not going to be all online unless, of course, things explode and there's a big outbreak and we exceed isolation or quarantine capacity. But I think with all the measures we have in place, with good enforcement and good sort of, you know, personal responsibility, that this is unlikely to happen.
So I want to zero in, Kathy, on something Dr. Hamer just said. Dr. Hamer, you said unless things explode and you get beyond capacity. And that has been a question. What is the threshold for shutting it down? Is it a certain level of positivity and test rates? Is it overflow on isolation and quarantine? What is that metric?
I think there's no single metric. Kathy,
I am so sorry. We have lost your sound quality. I heard you say, I think there's no single metric, but we've lost your sound quality. I apologize for that. Dr. Hamer, I'm going to let you pick it up. We'll see if we can get Kathy back.
Okay, so we have developed some metrics and are actually working on even more complex metrics. I think the real simple ones are going to be monitoring our use of isolation rooms and quarantine rooms. And if we're reaching capacity for those, we will, I'd say, even if we reach like 75% capacity, that we're going to be concerned. And certainly if we reach full capacity, we would have to change our strategies. But I think we would want to do that earlier in order to try and avoid that happening. We've got a group of really smart medical epidemiologists and statisticians, mathematicians, that are helping to really try and analyze both local data from the state of Massachusetts and the surrounding counties, but also on-campus data to try and determine the rate of transmission, the sort of estimated rate of transmission, and how that's changing. If we see that it looks like it's increasing, then that will be another measure that will cause us to change practice and potentially change the strategies.
Okay, and we do have Kathy Spiegelman back now. So in a follow-up question in our last minute, Kathy, are you confident that that set of forward-looking metrics is enough to keep an outbreak from happening, or is it inevitable and this is get as much on-campus time as you can before the inevitable happens?
Oh my, I don't know that I want to put myself in the position of having to predict everything that you just asked me to take a firm position on.
Fair enough.
I will tell you, though, that we, for the past 6 months, as we have pivoted to all of the concerns that you've begun to raise, that callers have raised about what it means to bring our students, faculty, and staff back to campus, we believe that the measures, all the ones that were described at BU, all the ones that I've had a chance to describe to you today, are measures that will counter the likelihood of an outbreak, and that we will be watching it very closely because public health and safety is the number one priority for everything that we're doing, and we believe that we can carry it out. So I hope that we maybe can have a conversation at the end of the semester, and we can all say that all the things that we're doing actually were successful.
And that's Kathy Spiegelman, Vice President and Chief of Campus Planning and Development at Northeastern. Thank you, Kathy.
Okay, you're welcome.
And Dr. David Hamer, Professor of Global Health at BU School of Public Health and School of Medicine and a member of the Medical Advisory Group. Thank you so much for joining us again.
My pleasure.